Thank you, Prem. Thank you, Ganesh. And dear listeners, Sairam from Prashantinilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And yes, today is October 29th, 2015, and we are in the last week of October. And soon will begin the much-awaited month of the year. In fact, so many have been looking forward to it in such eager manner. So much everyone has been looking forward to it, waiting for it, preparing for it. And you had programs all around the year celebrating the 90th birthday of Bhagwan.
It is a moment of celebration, a moment of jubilation, of joyous inspiration. It is 90 glorious years of Satya Sam, 90 glorious years of pure love penetrating a million souls in a million ways. The Radio Sai team humbly bows down at his lotus feet in this landmark year of his divine advent.
Yes, Radio Sai is preparing for the birthday with all of you, along with all of you, dear brothers and sisters. This year, we have seen a plethora of programs and Parthi pilgrimages. Currently, there is a week-long cultural festival by devotees from Tamil Nadu. Before this, you had devotees from United Kingdom, and even before United Kingdom, there were devotees from South Africa. In fact, I had the chance to talk to a group from South Africa. And what they shared is so moving, so uplifting. The way Swami has captured these hearts so far away from Prashanti. Some of them have not even had a glimpse of Bhagwan. But the way the love Swami, the way Bhagwan has touched and transformed them and continues to inspire them is just amazing. In Satyam Shivam Sundaram, Professor Kasturi writes how way back in the 60s, Swami used to write letters personally to prisoners in a jail in Andhra Pradesh. Professor Kasturi says, when the life-giving Satya Sai Ganga wends its way into a prison, dead bones become alive, dry plants put forth leaves, sunshine sweeps away sadness. Blessed are they whose iniquities are forgotten, to whom the Lord will not impute any sin. He says, this prison in Andhra Pradesh was grim and gaunt, but it was not far from God's grace. In fact, when Bhagwan sent a message to these prisoners, when they asked for it, one of the prisoners, in grateful acknowledgement, wrote back to Swami saying, Swami, we are sinners, certainly, but our lives have become full of hope through some stray acts of merit which we chanced to do in our past birth, because we have now received your grace. Some good act in our previous birth has rendered ourselves fit to receive your grace. Really, if there is any who can be declared fortunate in this world, we are the ones. The prisoners are writing to Swami, saying they are the most fortunate ones in this world. They said, Swami, we are proud of this. This is no ordinary event that your stream of mercy has started flowing towards such mean men like us, men who have injured society and who are suffering punishment for that. We prayed that you grant us your darshan and blessings, and you have written to us out of vastness of your mercy. Another prisoner said, each letter that comes to us from Prashanti is a blessing. Truly, it is as if Baba himself is before us, conversing with us. And now that we have received this nectar, the feeling that we are undergoing a sentence is just fast disappearing. With this food, with this nectar, our hearts have become full. They have become free. They are already free. Now we have no desire. Hearts do not go towards any other desire. Another person undergoing sentence wrote to Bhagwan, Swami, whether I sit or walk, whether I see or hear, I am trying to dedicate every moment to you. Why should these hands be idle? I am writing Ramanama with the intent to complete 10 million names. And this has become my daily sadhana. Like this, in the hearts of many a prisoner, there had sprouted the creeper of devotion, devotion to the Almighty. And that is what the Lord's love can do. No matter who you are and where you are, the Lord does not judge. He knows only to love. And His love has no jurisdiction, no limitation, no boundaries, no conditions. And as Swami says, no reason nor season. It is for all the time. And one beautiful glimpse of this is what I experienced when I spoke to this group of devotees from South Africa. We recorded this conversation after their beautiful musical presentation in the presence of Bhagwan in Sai Kulwant Hall on October 8, 2015. It was more than an hour-long conversation, but very heartwarming and very inspiring. So this is what we will relish in this last segment of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to this special episode of Outside Inside, Deep Inside. And today, by Swami's grace, we have in the studios three devotees from South Africa. And those who are familiar with history will know the unique bond and relationship between India and South Africa. Both these countries share a common colonial past. Both have fought long and hard for their freedom. Both believe in the same values. Both are hugely diverse and deeply connected, going back to hundreds of years. Most importantly, the values for which the current era salutes India and holds India in highest regard, very interestingly, in the modern times were first experimented in South Africa and then implemented to success in India, thus proving their efficacy, their power and their powerful relevance in the current times. And then we saw the cascading effect of this in other nations. Gandhiji said, "My religion is based on truth and non-violence. Truth is God, and non-violence is the means of realizing Him." And he added, "I have nothing new to teach the world. Truth and non-violence are as old as the hills. All I have done is to try experiments in both on a scale as vast as I could." And this experiment of Gandhiji began in South Africa on a 9/11. Yes, on September 11, 1906, Gandhiji called a mass meeting of some 3,000 Transvaal Indians at the Empire Theatre in Johannesburg. The objective was to find ways to resist the Asiatic Law Amendment Ordinance. This was a draft proposal basically to legalize all the discrimination against the Asians. Because the way the law was made, it was granting divine rights to the whites, it was condemning the blacks, and it was discriminating against the brown. Gandhiji was actually committed to the due process of law. He attempted legal redress first. He actually wrote to higher authorities in South Africa and to influential members of the British Parliament. But none of this proved effective. And it is at this point that Gandhiji decided to take the next step, and which was the beginning of a new chapter in the never-ending fight against human injustice. So that is how the famous Satyagraha movement began, which became the cornerstone of India's fight for independence. This was actually born in South Africa. In fact, at that time, Gandhiji did not know what name to give to this new movement.
Initially he used the term passive resistance, but this was grossly inadequate and often misleading, because passive resistance was viewed as a weapon of the weak and helpless. Gandhiji wanted a new nomenclature which would convey the strength and the power of this idea. And so, what he did was, he announced a small prize in Indian Opinion for any reader who invented the best designation for this novel struggle. And one of the competitors, Mr. Manganlal Gandhi, suggested Sadagraha, meaning firmness in a good cause. Gandhiji liked the word, but it did not fully represent the idea he wanted to connote. So he modified it slightly and said Satyagraha, that is, the force born out of truth and love, or truth and non-violence. To put it simply, Satyagraha is the soul power. And since then, Gandhiji's Satyagraha not only liberated 300 million Indians from the over 200 year English rule, but also inspired a string of revolutions under legendary leaders, from Vinoba Bhave, who started the Bhutan movement, to Sundarlal Bahuguna, who started the Chipko movement in India, to Martin Luther King Jr., to Nelson Mandela in South Africa. In fact, South African leader Nelson Mandela was awarded the Mahatma Gandhi Peace Prize and the Bharat Ratna by the Indian government. Now, the reason why I mentioned all this is the basis of Indian culture is truth and righteousness, Satyam Vada Dharmam Chara. And in the modern times, this nation, hundreds of miles away from India, sacrificed a lot, went through a lot of pain and strife to uphold these values, to stand as a testimony to the relevance of these values. No wonder the same soul of these values, the source of these values, when Bhagwan came down in a human form, he was so delighted. We saw that time and again, so delighted whenever he saw members from this rainbow nation. In fact, in September 2010, more than 2,500 devotees were at his lotus feet to bask in his love. And what a glorious day it was in Sai Kulwanthal that evening. It was already 7 by the time Swami came out that day, but he stayed on till 9 in the night, giving himself away fully, happily, gleefully to the South African devotees. The name of the play was Ubuntu, and it was enacted even before the play began. When Bhagwan was coming on the stage, you could see that broad smile on his face. In fact, he turned to the students and said, "See, they have all come from South Africa." There was that light in his eyes. There was that beautiful childlike expectation, that eagerness, and that feeling of connectedness. I remember a girl then presented Bhagwan with an album that contained letters written by the children. Swami began to leaf through it, and the student by Bhagwan's side aided Swami by turning the pages. And at one point, when Bhagwan turned 5 or 6 pages together, in fact, this boy who was helping Bhagwan, instead of turning one page, he thought perhaps Bhagwan has read, and he had turned 5-6 pages together. And that's when Swami seemed to scold him and turned to him and said, "Turn only one page." Swami said, "See, these are all letters all these people have written." He told that boy he wanted to read every letter, and he wanted to do it slowly. And he explained that very sweetly to the boy who was helping him. And only after he went through the letters, the program began. And the program was that beautiful story of unity in diversity. It was a 50-minute presentation which ran through the historical time of evolution of the nation, beginning from immigration of the tribals, the Europeans and the Indians, to the dark days of apartheid, which concluded in what the nation is in the present times. The invasions by the foreigners were depicted, but the beauty in this presentation was that it never said that these foreigners depleted or destroyed Africa. Very beautifully, the play only proclaimed those were troubled times, but it was these times that enriched the culture of the nation. That shows that positivity, that shows how so accepting, how they always wanted to see that silver lining. nothing can depress this nation. In fact, there was that episode of Mahatma Gandhi also in the drama that was presented. And I remember after the program was over, Swami blessed all the participants with group photographs. He asked many of them their names, and then he just wanted to spend time with them. And you could see that even after the photo session, Bhagwan generally would return to the stage, but that day he stayed on. He sat down in their midst and he asked them to sing bhajans. And then he personally distributed prasadam from his own hands. And there was one very beautiful moment there when Bhagwan was there with all the South African devotees. There was one boy on a wheelchair who just got up and came skipping to Bhagwan. He bent down and took namaskar. There was a smile on his face, a smile of fulfillment. Swami called him closer and Bhagwan very lovingly touched him on his head. And you should have seen that boy, that touch from Bhagwan just threw him into a bout of extreme delight. He was exhilarated. He almost got up and he began to dance his way back. What a beautiful sight to see. And there were so many such beautiful moments. It was a wonderful sight to see how so many were touched by God. And this evening too was such an evening. The evening of October 9th, 2015. Because we just had another amazing program by South African devotees. It was all about getting rid of the little lie. The little lie that has pervaded our lives in myriad ways in the recent times. And realizing that to reach Puttaparthi and have the Lord's darshan, we have to put apart the I. That is the way to Puttaparthi. And yes, it was an amazing saga of so many people being touched by the Lord. Everybody's story is unique. Everybody's story is an inspiration. And to continue this story of how Bhagwan touches us, transforms us, and then actually converts us into transformers, we have today three brothers who are going to share their moments of being in Prashantanilayam, their moments of basking in His divine proximity. We have Brother Ravi Taver, who is the National Devotional Coordinator of South Africa, as well as the Media Coordinator of Zone 9A. Zone 9A comprises of all the South African countries and Mauritius. We have Brother Shane Kupaswamy. He is the master behind all the melodies that we heard today. And we have Brother Kavir Daya, another inspired Sayyuth who has captured Swami in his heart through his captivating chanting of Vedic hymns. So three pillars of the South African Sai movement. Welcome Brother Ravi Taver, Brother Kavir and Brother Shane Kupaswamy to Outside, Inside, Deep Inside and to Radio Sai.
Thank you so much.
So let us begin with what is fresh in our mind. Let us begin with the moments that are still very much alive. Tell us about the evening program. Tell us about how it felt presenting it to Bhagwan. Tell us what went in making this and what is it that you are going to carry with you after today's presentation. Yes, Brother Ravi.
So I will talk from the overall perspective, and then Brother Shane can talk from the musical, and Brother Kavir can talk from the Vedic chanting.
Sure.
So it was a very fulfilling journey, Yatra to Parthi, Prashanti. Devotees from all over the country came together and practiced the musicals, and the youth from the country also put together the production. We were fortunate to have with us a former alumni of Prashanti school, Brother Akshay, who assisted greatly.
Akshay Kamath.
Who assisted greatly in penning the drama together with his wife Shruti, and putting it together with different variations for different programs, because we had prepared it for Swami's program in Mahasamadhi Day.
You had prepared this?
For Mahasamadhi in a different format.
Okay.
Yeah, not the same, because at Prashanti you've got to prepare, you know, there's no mixture. We didn't mix the scenes, but one scene was female and one scene.
Okay.
So it's changed a lot from what was presented for the final production in Prashanti. But a lot of work went into the musical, the background. We had some of our regional devotional wing coordinators like Brother Raitan, and they all participated in making sure this program on the back end of it came together in a united, loving environment.
Wonderful.
Per se.
Wonderful. So, Brother Shane, can I ask you, what is your most memorable moment of today?
I would think the most memorable moment of today was when we had our last practice, and there were so many things that were seeming to be wrong or seeming to be not perfected. And
when you're practicing in the morning.
Yeah, we practice in the morning, and certain things we said, you know what, this can be changed, that can be changed. And at the moment when we finished practice, we said, you know what, whatever is there, we've done the best that we can do, and we just need to surrender to Swami. And a few hours later, as we presented this, everything was absolutely perfect. It was 110 times than anything, any time we've practiced so far. And it just goes to show that you put in the practice and you do all of that as your offering to Swami, and on the day He will totally take over all of your tasks, and He will play through you, He will sing through you, He will act through you, He will be you. You know, so that's my most inspiring moment of this, knowing that everything came together so, so beautifully, and that was all because we surrendered to Swami totally. And yeah, that was my most best
wonderful
moment of this. Yeah.
Once you do your best and leave the rest, what will come out is only what is the best as per what He wants.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Then He does His best for us.
So true.
Fantastic. And so, Brother Kavir, tell us, you were part of the drama, you're very much involved in the drama in terms of acting, and someone who was in the thick of things. Tell us, what is it that you're going to take home with you after today's presentation?
Thank you, Brother Vishu. I think this journey has been so amazing. As Brother Ravi said, that this I Am I drama we presented for Swami's Mahasamadhi, and the actual script writing by Brother Akshay and Shruti, his wife, has been just amazing, because it started in about the month of February this year. And altogether there must have been about over 35 youth and actors involved. And the whole journey has just been so wonderful leading up to today, and just to be together in unity.
What is it that you're going to take home with you from this trip to Prashanti?
I think it's Nectarine, Divine Pristine, showers of Swami's love, just felt sitting there, and everyone offering and pouring out their heart to Him.
When did you come to Prashanti before?
My first time was in the year 1997, and I was a little child, and I remember coming with my dad and sitting there, and I just saw the Lord of the Universe glide and slide and move past. And it was just so beautiful the way Swami could interact with a child, move to the youth, make him laugh, move to a senior, touch their heart. And all in that few moments, those moments are stored in the album of one's heart forever. And then the last I've been was 2012. And I arrived on January 1st with my family, and it was the first time I'd seen the Mahasamadhi. And as I think a lot of the students mentioned, that before, you know, we would wait for the Lord to arrive, and now the Lord waits for us to arrive.
Yes.
And His presence was really felt deep within the heart, sitting there, meditating, contemplating, seeing Him within and taking that divine moment of Swami's presence within back to your country.
But when was that moment in your life when you knew in your heart of hearts that yes, He is the Lord of the Universe?
For me, I think every day presents thousands of miracles. Every moment presents Swami's invisible hand, making things impossible possible. As Brother Shane was saying, how the practices were going. And then today he just takes over. And the same with Vedachan practices. We thought, how is it going to work out? But when he takes over, you think the Lord of the universe, the divine director, he has written such a beautiful script that we never have to worry about what's going to happen. If we just let him take over, somehow the divine puppeteer makes it all fall into place.
But as a teenager, were you in love with him right from your childhood? Or was there any moment in your life which sort of confirmed in you that he is something extraordinary? He is the one to whom I should give my heart.
As a young child growing up, I was very attracted to PlayStation and the company of friends and everything other than satsang. And every Thursday my parents would go to satsang and they would encourage me to attend. But somehow there wasn't that yearning. I guess I was still learning about what
this journey. So by the time you were born, your parents were already devotees?
Yes.
Okay.
And I happened to fall a bit sick at the age of about 16. And then I was moved to hospital and my glands had swollen a bit. And the doctors had...
In the neck region?
Yes. And the doctors had diagnosed it as a form of hepatitis, but they were uncertain as to what type of hepatitis it is. So the doctor himself told us that he's going to do a bit of research on it. So it was a bit of a scare to my parents as well. So what happened was, my mom had just left the book Satyam Shivam Sundaram on Swami's life by the side of my bed. And she said, you know, in case you get bored at the hospital, you can read it. And at the back of my mind, I said to myself, probably no chance I will read the book, but anyway. But one day, I just happened to open the book. And once I started, I couldn't believe that such a divine being verily is walking this earth. And his lotus feet is touching the ground. And we're breathing the same air he is breathing. And I thought, you know, in this book, so many lives have been transformed. Can you perhaps transform my life too? And thereafter, I just, something turned and I started attending bhajans. I was so attracted to the songs and started playing harmonium and trying to get involved, and my whole friend circles also changed. And, you know, now today I can't think of life before.
So that sickness was actually a blessing in disguise. That was the turning point.
Certainly.
Isn't it?
Certainly.
Actually, there's no moment in our life is actually an adversity. In every adversity, there is so much of opportunity, isn't it? And we fail to see it at that point in time. But I think once you live thinking of Bhagwan at every moment and, you know, live in the presence of Swami at every moment, I think there are times when, you know, whatever happens, you don't look at anything as adversity, isn't it, Brother Ravi?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I just wanted to say, coincidentally, you know, Brother Kavir is talking about the master of the universe. So I was just telling the group that the song that we sang today, O Beloved Master of the Universe, You Are Our Savior and Guide, was composed by South African devotees in a center in Sandton. And it was not a session of music, it was just a session of, what do you think Bhagwan means to you?
Oh wow.
Give us a sentence.
Uh-huh.
And each one gave a sentence, and we wrote it down, and eventually it started to translate into a song.
Oh wow.
And we just put the music to it, and there was a song. So, you know, and each one felt that the line contributed towards Bhagwan being the master of the universe, the savior and guide. He is the heartbeat of the heart. You know.
Shane, would you like to sing it?
Yes, sing it.
Just sing it, it would be nice.
Okay, next week we can try it.
Oh, beloved, my Master of the universe. Oh, beloved Master of the universe. You are our Savior and guide. You are the heartbeat of us. You are our Savior and guide. You are the heartbeat of our heart. Satya Sai, ocean of mercy, let us be the instruments of love. Satya Sai, ocean of mercy, let us be the instruments of love. Baba, Swami, Bhagavan, we are one. 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 Baba, Swami, Bhagavan, we are one.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you so much, Brother Ravi, for sharing the genesis of this song. I think that is really fantastic how the song has come about. It is purely outpouring of what each person feels, what Swami means to him or her.
Absolutely, and it was amazing that the raga just came, Dalbari Karana just came, and you know, it's a raga of emotion.
Yes, so very powerful raga.
And when God gives the words, He also gives the melody.
Melody.
And it just came at the same time, and everybody had a tear in their eye when we started to put it together and you know, sing it as devotees who don't know music, by the way, who never did this before, you know, so.
Amazing.
It's just what Swami means to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The bhava came first, then the raga and the tala.
Yes, absolutely.
Phenomenal. Really amazing. So, Brother Shane, tell us about how Bhagwan pulled you into him through music.
Well, it's a very interesting story. I wasn't born into a Sai family, so my parents, I have an older brother, so they were basically wanting another child, and 16 years later, after my brother was born, I was born. So our paths came into, or I should say Swami drawed us closer to His life when a few doors away, one of our neighbors said, why don't you come to Satsang and, you know, just see if it can help you in your lives, whatever. So, and
how old were you then?
I was probably around 2 years, 3 years old,
okay,
around that age. So my brother started going first, and then my mom joined, and then eventually the whole family, you know, sort of tags along. So at about 4 years or so, I was so intrigued with learning the harmonium and learning music and enjoying bhajans, because the first draw card when you go to satsang is bhajans. You're enthralled by it, and you know. So later on, I saved some money and stuff, and we eventually bought a harmonium. But prior to that, my parents, I remember this fond memory, that they bought me a little toy keyboard. And out of that keyboard, my parents used to wonder, how come bhajans play out of those keyboards? It's like programmed, and you press one key, and you know, it plays bhajans. So they didn't actually realize that I used to actually play the bhajans with this toy keyboard, and eventually buying the harmonium, and I think
it just came very naturally to you.
Very, very naturally, yeah.
And how old were you when you just started playing bhajans?
I would be at about 6 years old where I used to play at satsang.
So you're a prodigy.
I know, Swami is the only prodigy.
So it's
just music, I don't know, music just fell through. Swami inspired me, and many people ask how you play and how you do the thing, but most people will tell you that you don't know how it happens.
Yes.
Swami just playing through you. You don't know where the beats of the tabla come from, Swami playing through you. You don't know how the voice works, but it's Swami singing through you. So, yeah, and then eventually joining through the organization and in the various structures, I find myself very close to the musical side and love to, how can I say, change things up. Like today, have some pianos and have some tablas and, you know, do something different. I think we must constantly reinvent everything we do to make it so much more better, to make it so much more perfect for the Lord.
Always trying and seeing how can I make my offering slightly better than what it was last time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Amazing. So music is something that really, I would say, kept you glued to the organization and kept you coming back to the Sai Samitis and Sai Centers. But what was the time when you really felt that deep connection with Swami? Was there any moment in life or was it just gradual, your love for Bhagwan sort of becoming a part of your life? Was it a gradual process or was there any event in life after which you were absolutely confirmed in your faith in Bhagwan?
You know, throughout my life there was always music, but at a certain stage we sometimes try to test Swami or see if Swami really is God in one terms. You know, you say, maybe Swami, my times were so bad and I felt you weren't there, and Swami, when I need you to do the most, and you know, you weren't there. But failing to realize that those are the times when Swami carried us and carried us to our journey. So yeah, in my life there's been lots of ups and downs, and at a certain point I said, you know what, maybe this is, we just come for the bhajans and go home, come for the sevas and go home. There must be continuity in it. And I had taken on some roles in the organization, leadership roles, and I found myself struggling in between studies and trying to fulfill those leadership roles. And I said, Swami, you know what? You say us not to ask for things materialistically, but certain things we need to perform your work. You know, for example, in South Africa, you need a car. You may need some sort of mode of transport or however so, you know. There's certain things that we all need to...
You need sometimes some resources, some support, some help.
Exactly. Yeah. And after coming to Prashanthi in 2009, in June of 2009, it was Guru Purnima, and out of His grace, we got first row seat, and I watched Him come down, and that was it for me. I said, if I had to take moksha now, I would be totally perfect, because I've reached everything I've needed to, you know. And then... in that moment, I asked Swami for something materialistic. And I know it was so bad, you know, we parents always say us, you know, don't ask for anything materialistic. It's only your love for Swami. But Swami understood why I needed this item, should I say. And when I got back to South Africa, there was the exact amount of, should I say, money in my bank account, and the exact amount of, or the item that I needed, I didn't go and search out, it came to me, and everything worked out absolutely perfect, the money, the item, and everything. And I was like, Swami, subconsciously I've asked for this, but I never thought it would come true. You know what is my subconscious, you know what's in my conscious state, and I never thought this would come true because I always put it on the back burner. And Swami just there again reaffirms us and says he knows everything, what we knowingly think, what we unknowingly think, what we knowingly want and what we unknowingly need. You know, so He's always there for us in everything. And from then, I think it's just grown my intense faith for Swami, you know. Constantly, after that, I'd never doubted any up till today. I never will possibly ever again doubt that Swami is always taking care of us. But also, He'll always take care of us. And He'll always give us what we want in the right time. It's just about being patient enough to wait and to know when His time is the right time, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, for God to give us anything material is child's play, so to speak.
So true.
And I think whenever there is a pure will, whenever there is a pure desire, we will always see that Bhagwan will ensure that the universe works for us. In fact, I always remember a very beautiful statement that Swami Vivekananda made once. He said, a pure will is omnipotent. And we have heard Bhagwan also say that any number of times. He would say that, you know, if you have that intense desire to do something good,
you will always find resources for it. You will always find just things coming together for to make that happen. Because there is that power, because the universe is such a living organism which responds to that goodness, and you've experienced that.
Absolutely.
And I guess, Brother Ravi, this is something that you probably, as one of the leaders of the organization, perhaps would have experienced this, you know, because you are the one who must be organizing many programs at so many points of time during the year. And every time you need to organize people, organizes men, material resources for a program, and you would always see that something happens, you know, you would see the invisible hand of Swami working. Is that an experience that you go through?
Absolutely, absolutely. Being an official at a center level, the 1 year we plan to do 5 seva projects on Swami's birthday, morning Omkar Suprabhatam Nagar Sankirtan, 5 seva projects, plus do the main birthday celebration. And everybody thought it was impossible to do 5 seva projects because you only have a membership of 300. How would 5 seva projects, and we planned them to happen simultaneously in the morning. And
so all the 5 projects simultaneously in the morning.
Yes, we said if you go...
So all the 300 were divided between all these projects.
Yes. But on that day...
But it needs a lot of organizing and management.
Yes. But all we did was we said, Sai Ram, there's an opportunity to do Swami's, choose an activity. Where we thought the membership is 300, 700 people pitched up on the day.
Oh my God.
And everything, we did nothing. We stood and watched Swami's Leela unfold because...
This was where in South Africa?
In Sandton. In Sandton. And we watched Swami's Leela unfold because everybody took charge. Each one took an activity, and the night before, they each one took an activity for packing, for, and buses came, and everybody went off, did the seva, came back, started preparing the lunch for the main program, plus food for feeding out in the streets at night, got to the main program, did the main program, went out and started feeding in the streets again, and everybody participated. Impossible, well, became possible.
Impossible.
Yeah, impossible, yes, yes.
Amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
It must be a very exciting experience being one of the leaders, with the office bearers of the organization, isn't it?
Yes, yes. You get, there's a sweet made called licorice all sorts. You know, you get different types of sweets. You know, life is like a box of chocolates.
Yes.
So you get to work with this diversity that comes into contact with you. And it's interesting because I think you learn much more than, you know, you think that you could be teaching somebody or helping somebody. But everybody who comes into your life has a unique message for you to learn as an official or a convener or a coordinator, that your personal sadhana, your personal pathway to God just accumulates all this. They say when the student is ready, the guru will come.
Yes.
And many gurus come, all of them in unknown ways.
Unknown ways.
Yeah.
Amazing. As they say that, you know, there will be so many people that will come into your life. Some will love you, some will hate you, some will berate you, some will like you, some will leave you, some will be with you, some will live with you, but ultimately everyone will end up making you.
Correct. Absolutely.
And Swami sends different people at different points in time in through different ways just so that we continue to grow, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing. So tell us, Brother Ravi, I have like 2-3 things going on in my mind. First thing is, what has been your inspiration? Because you're giving so much of your time to the organization and you are a senior professional in marketing and strategy in international business that has its own commitments and pressures. And you are able to give so much of yourself to the organization. So first, what has been your inspiration? And second, what are the challenges and how are you able to deal with it?
I think Swami came into my life through music. Like Shane. Yes,
oh, wonderful.
Yes. So music is my life.
Oh.
And I think Swami attacked those bhajan singers first.
Swami knows which button to press for each person.
Correct. Absolutely. That's how I came into the organization. And Swami is...
So that was like when you were a teenager or...
No. When I was... I just finished university and, yeah, well, college, yeah.
So you were already into music and so you were drawn towards bhajans?
Yeah. Well, I used to play music from the age of 6. So I used to play English music. So I used to play jazz and... Yeah, jazz. The genre is jazz.
Okay.
So, fusion. So I used to play the jazz drum and those percussion instruments. So... But everything came naturally.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you never went to a teacher?
No, initially not to a teacher. So it was something that you'd watch it and then you would play it. Repeat what the player, others were doing. Sometimes technique may not have been correct or whatever, but the ability to...
Replicate
was...
Natural.
Was natural, yes. Wow. Yeah. Once when I was asleep, I was dreaming that I was sitting on the beach and there was a boat coming to the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And as the boat came closer and closer to the shore, Mother Saraswati was sitting on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And she's calling me into the boat. And at that time, being a young boy, you don't understand the meaning of this dream. And as I get into the boat, she rows this boat into the middle of the sea.
Oh.
And there in the middle of the sea is a temple.
Mm-hmm.
And she puts the boat and she's calling me onto the temple. And as I put my foot onto the temple in this dream, the milk from the murtis on the side of the temple starts to fall.
Oh, wow.
Onto me. And from that point onwards, music became like a ingrained... So I can't explain it, but it's like... It just used to happen. You know, became a recording artist, became... So it was just one after the other. Doors would just open. Things would come naturally. And music, in fact, I neglected my studies because the love for music was more than academic.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Dasara is just going to start and we are talking about the grace of the mother.
Absolutely. And Dasara is a special time for me. So,
what is it?
Yeah, there are two special days for me. When I was 3 months old, the doctors had told my parents that I only have 3 months to live.
Mm-hmm.
So the special day is prayer to Lord Skanda, because my granny took a vow that if God can save me and prove the doctors wrong, she would carry kavadi. There's a festival called kavadi.
Yes.
So she would carry kavadi.
And the devotees of Lord Muruga.
Yes.
That's the propitiatory rite.
Correct, yes. And then she guaranteed my father would carry kavadi, and then she gave a guarantee to God that when the grandson grows up, he'll also carry kavadi.
So we will do any sacrifice, we'll go to any length, but just save this child.
Correct, yeah. And that happened, and so that I hold very dear to me, you know. So when Swami consecrated the murti for Skanda, the friend.
Subramanyam,
yeah. So it was like there's a lot of messages that came through that. You know, to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the songs that was at that point was a song called Deva Senapati.
Mm-hmm.
Also in like my favorite raga. So it all just happened so naturally that, you know, the messages come to you and yeah. The challenges, there's no challenges per se, because...
But you said there are two important days for you.
Yeah, so Kavadi, Taipusam Kavadi and Dasara, Navaratri in Dasara. Yeah.
Navaratri. Why Navaratri? Because of Saraswati's...
Saraswati, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's really marvelous in the sense that, you know, Mother Saraswati, you actually had that vision of Mother Saraswati blessing you.
Yes.
With that art.
And challenges per se, there's not much challenges because Swami gave me a wife that... takes care, you know, she allows me to do Bhagwan's work without a flinch of anything. So she's back home with three of our children, my daughter Saisha and son Keshav and Dhruv. So she's there busy taking care of them whilst I'm here enjoying darshan of Bhagwan. So, yeah.
Can I also ask you something slightly different? The South Africa is one country which has a very checkered past. A lot of it has gone through, and slowly the country is progressing. And I think there are still so many remnants of the past history and the past ideology and mindset. How easy or difficult has it been for you to really live Swami's teachings in practical life, practice love, practice forgiveness, practice the principle of truth. You know, you're working with the government, you're working with the corporates, and you have had that experience of working with various kinds of people at various levels. And of course, working with the Sai organization, that is different. But at every stage, because you are someone who has seen so much of life, how easy or difficult has it been to really live Swami's teachings in real life?
It's quite a long question, so we're going to break it up. So in terms of me personally, if I can talk, so I was born in Durban, and so my mom lives in Durban, and moving from Natal to Gauteng, which is where Johannesburg is, it was a new environment for me, and to move there, I only knew music. Mm-hmm. So, and the only way out was to get involved in satsang, mm-hmm. and to keep in that. So I formed my life around being only playing music in satsangs and making sure that I attend these bhajans and keep myself busy. Otherwise, the mind wanders, you know, and it just, you can get into the wrong company, you could, you know, end up in the wrong place. And in a fast-paced moving city like Johannesburg, it's only a blink, eye blink away that you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So I kept myself in those places where I knew that I was in a satsang and I could be safe in God's work. In terms of the challenges of work, it's been difficult because, when I say difficult, is South Africans have generally per se, because of the colonialism, they have a questioning mindset and they have a questioning culture. So it is not like if you go to Mauritius or you go to Maputo, which is also Southern African countries, if a manager says, please do this for me, they would say, yes, I am going to do it, because they could see the relevance to the work. Whereas in South Africa, as a manager, you would have to explain the relevance of what you are asking, because the person would not see it naturally. Mm-hmm. So that's a difficulty, because you have to...
There is some element of doubt, some element of apprehension, mistrust.
Yes, correct. So you would never find... So if a group of people get together and say, we're going to plan X, Y, and Z to be done as a thing. So you always get the question, why should we do it like that? Who said we can do it like that? No, we must look at this. A coach of mine once thought is the evil of action. So if you constantly sit in meetings thinking, when will the action happen? So we have that kind of mind. So let's consult with the whole, everybody, and then instead of putting a stick in the ground, say, okay, so this is a stick in the ground, what do we want to plan around this? And everybody contributes to it. So that's natural culture because of the colonial and the apartheid, because a lot of mistrust and all of those things. So those challenges is difficult at work, because you get it, it's a challenge. You have to maintain your sanity in terms of not losing your temper, not being able to... So Swami grounds you, because the Swami's teachings always comes to the fore. Be all, do nothing.
Hmm.
You know? See all, say nothing. Sometimes you have to just put that in place and say, Swami, this problem is your problem. Or this issue is your issue. You sort it out. There are some cases where you have to, you know, say something, but it's not like Swami says, it's not what you say, it's how you say it also. So these are like the daily challenges in work or in the corporate world or the, so you have to give a little bit more tolerance levels. Your tolerance levels has to be that much more higher.
Mm.
And in South Africa, everybody wants to become rich now because of the freedom or democracy that we've received. So you've got a lot of people focusing on the aspect of money, per se, and not necessarily job stability or those things. So if you interfere, it's like saying you're putting your hands into somebody else's pocket. The person's going to take your hands out and wring it for you. So if you stand in the way of somebody's job, and if you are, you know, holding them back, then the backlash of that could always be greater. So people, you could be trampled upon if somebody wants to climb the corporate ladder.
Yes, I know.
And you could become a casualty. So... But you go home and pray that much harder, you sing that much harder, you meditate and chant that much harder.
Mm.
So it's just because you know that the dharma of a father is to go and earn, put the plate of food on the table, send the child to school. So we have to always keep that at the back of our heads, you know, that what is our dharma as a father? What is our dharma as a brother or a... That's how we keep Swami's...
All these principles of being patient, of being tolerant,
yes,
you see that on a daily basis you have to exercise them. Right?
Yes.
That's how you deal with the challenges. Mm. Shane, if I were to ask you, what is that one teaching of Swami which you have found extremely useful in your life?
Very interesting question, sir. I think I can't specify a single teaching of Swami's, because as you go through your life, every day there's something new to apply to it. I know at home we have this little pocket kind of calendar that you flip every day and it mm-hmm. gives you a new message for the day. So ever so often when I leave home, I try to flip the calendar to the day, read that message and try to implement it in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because every day is not the same. We don't go through the same circumstances. Mm-hmm. And every day, some days feel like a struggle that you'll never win. So trying to apply Swami's, the same teaching, is quite hard. But knowing his teachings on a whole and just knowing the five human values and practicing them constantly, slipping up here and there, but eventually getting back on track is the most important thing for me.
Can I ask you to perhaps just narrate one or two instances, you know, where in a particular situation, this is how you reacted? Perhaps a normal person, not exposed to Bhagwan's teachings, probably may not have thought that way, or you probably may not have also thought if you didn't feel at that moment that much connected to Swami. You know, but there are moments, you know, which we handle in a different way because we feel, no, Swami would want us to behave this way, or he somehow inspires us to take that leap of faith and behave in a particular manner. And you feel happy. There are times, as you also mentioned, where you miss doing that and later feel, oh no, I should have reacted that way. And next time you are careful about it. So can you narrate any such instance that come to you, you know, which at the end of it, you know, you were better and wiser after that experience?
Good question. Being in a professional environment, I'm a teacher by profession, so it's a real, real, real big challenge to implement some of Swami's teachings. Like, for example, trying to be peaceful all the time, you know. So I can take one instance where I had not a heated argument, but a debate with another a kid. And he was constantly not debating with a reason for an answer, but debating to question my authority.
Argument just for the sake of argument.
Exactly, exactly. So the normal reaction with my peers would be to obviously keep that child quiet and, you know, don't give him any attention. But after the class, after we finished our work and the class went out, I called him aside and I said, why do you want to do this? Do you think it's helping or it's contributing? And eventually trying to make him see, you know, understanding why I'm not the enemy, you know, I'm not there to debate with. But if you have a question, you can ask me. I'm open to that. So getting that kind of understanding, using Swami's teachings there, having a peaceful, loving attitude rather than reprimanding the child and saying, don't do that again, you know, changes my views on things. So it's hard trying to implement that all the time, because at certain times, you know, when you had so much things going on, you just want silence in the class and, you know, you want to be so disciplined, but also giving that equal opportunity for kids to just talk amongst themselves, to socialize with you, to know that you are also them and they are also you, and sharing that bond is equally as important as discipline.
Wonderful. I think gives you that sense of perseverance, right? That sense of patience.
Absolutely.
And perseverance that, you know, you want to give more chances to love. You want to give more chances to understanding and peace.
Sure, absolutely.
Because you feel that is the way out.
That's the way.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Kavir, can I ask you, have you done any experiments with love and truth?
I don't think I can experiment with love, because
in terms of, you know, they say it's very easy to say as a slogan, help ever, hurt never, love all, serve all.
Yes.
But when it comes to brass tacks, it may not be so straightforward. There are many challenges trying to live this dictum And I think every Sai devotee, every Sai youth tries to live this in their lives to the extent they can. And everybody have, they have, each one has his own lessons which sort of reinforce how to go about it. So what has been your experience?
I think the experiment with love and has been every day trying to see Swami in, you know, and life presents so many different situations.
Mm-hmm.
And today in the I Am I play, it started with the play is his, your role is his gift. Learn to act your role well to receive his grace when the curtain falls. And it's amazing. Our Swami says, test is my taste. And every situation brings about an opportunity. And sometimes we experiment with love, but ultimately he just wants us to experience his love.
Yes.
In the form of somebody else, in the form of an elderly lady wishing to cross the street, a boy on the street waiting for his next meal to eat. And those moments are really an opportunity for us to spend time with the Lord, conversing with him in his different permutations and combinations of all of his creations, and just noticing him in everyone. Yeah.
Sir, can I say he's being modest? If I have to observe his love action, Kavir teaches Vedic chanting in the Cape.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing it for 5 years.
For 5 years he's been doing that?
Yes. So that's a love action.
Absolutely.
That's an experiment. He didn't know where to take him. Mm. And that's my observation, sir.
I know.
So I know. Think he's being modest.
I know. Okay, that's wonderful. So Kavir, why don't you chant something for us?
I think I will chant the Unity Suktam, also known as Samana Suktam.
Sure.
Samsamidyuvasevrushannakne vishvaan yarya ilaspate samitya sesano vasunya bara sangaccha dvamsam vada dvamsam vomana amsi janatam deva bhagayata purve sanjanana upasate samano mantras samitis samani samanam manasah chittame esham samanam mantram avimantraye vasamane navo avisha ajuhomi samani va akutis samana hridayani vaha samanamastu vomano yata vasu sahasati om shanti shanti shantihi.
This is a very unusual mantra, generally not chanted.
Yes.
Samana Suktam. And tell us, Kavir, why are you so fascinated about this mantra?
It's such a beautiful and profound chant. So short, but it symbolizes unity. So in South Africa, we have the national anthem, Kosi Sikaleli. In India, Jana Gana. And this, you could say, is the universal anthem. And it's the last suktam or the summation of the entire Rig Veda in just 4 verses. So it starts off with a prayer to God and it says, O Supreme One, unite us all equally. At every step we worship you with equal sincerity. Fill us with treasures both spiritual and material, equally balanced. And then God replies and he says, then act as one unitedly. Speak as one unitedly. All of you become equal-minded in whatever you do. Consider all as equals and share nature's gifts equally. Let your heart impulses flow unitedly. Let your thoughts flow unitedly. Let your mantras unite you all. Let your committees resolve unitedly. Let your mantras energize everything equally around. Make your offerings with equal love and generosity. Let your hearts beat unitedly with equal sincerity. Thus, may your minds unite, and may your words unite, may your actions unite, all these three in harmony be, so you may live in unity, develop purity, and attain divinity. And if we think about it, this is really, truly the need of the hour, for all of us to come together. And it's like that spirit of Ubuntu. The other day I was walking, and I saw birds fly in the form of a V-shape. And I did some research, and there's actually a huge symbolism to this. Why do they do it? Actually, it says that the research says it improves their distance by more than 70%. It assists with the aerodynamics. And each of the birds take a chance to be the leader. Imagine if all of us come together and work in harmony, what we can achieve with that unity. Perhaps that V stands for Vedam.
Wow. Wonderful. That is how our perspective in life should be. Whether we look at the sky, or whether we look at the clouds, or whether we look at the birds, we have to see God.
Absolutely.
As Bhagwan says, when you look at a table or a chair, you should not say God is in the table or God is in the chair. You should say the table is God. The chair is God. You know, that is the kind of realization. That is what this unity will ultimately lead us to. Unity with everything around us. Wonderful. The reason I asked you, Kavir, this question is because you, by nature, you are so soft-spoken, and I always felt that, you know, you are someone who, just from your countenance and the way you carry yourself, I thought you are someone who would give love so much chance in any situation. And you are someone who also was is a marketing executive, because now you're taking a small break. And there are times in our corporate career, in our corporate life, and it might be very difficult to actually love the other person who is in front of you. So that's what I wanted to know from you. Have you encountered that such situations where, you know, the in front of you was a person who was very difficult to for you to actually love, but you somehow did it? And how you were able to do it? For example, if someone in your office, you know, has not been particularly polite with you and has done something probably which was unbecoming of him, and he appears in front of you, can you love him?
I think Dalai Lama said that if you have time to judge, you don't have time to love.
Wow. Yes, that's what Mother Teresa said.
Yes.
Wonderful. And that's what we saw in Swami's life too.
Yes. And in the workplace, I would think it's the same. Working in the marketing, of course, sometimes it can be very demanding and there's lots of pressures. And working in marketing, in particular on digital advertising, I would always be in front of the computer. So it gave me opportunity to always listen to music through the computer, and in particular Radio Sai, and one particular presenter, Brother Bishop Rushdie.
So thanks to digital marketing, you have the opportunity to sit in front of the computer, and so you utilize that time listening to Bhagwan. And that was what was presented today in the play too. You have to use the technology, not as Bhagwan said, not as technology. You know, Bhagwan used to always play with this word technology and say that, you know, if you do not use technology possibly, then the technology will trick you. It will trip you and trick you. And that's what it does. But otherwise, the technology can actually take you to great heights. Yes.
Correct.
And you are using the technology to always take you to heights of bliss in remaining connected to Bhagwan. Wonderful. That's fantastic. How was it for you, Brother Shane, when you heard about Bhagwan's passing?
I remember the day very fondly, where in South Africa on a Sunday we have regional service, so where all the centers in a specific area would come together and render bhajans and a talk, a discourse, maybe a seva, something of that nature. And that Sunday, it was, I think Swami had taken Samadhi the Saturday night going into Sunday, and when we heard the news, it was almost unreal. Like, you never thought it's possible. And up until that time, I've never visited Prashanti for the mere reason, I've put it on the back burner and said, no, Swami is not there physically, so there's no real need for me to go to Prashanti anymore. And this trip so happened and worked out such that I got the opportunity to come here. And when I came here, the feeling I felt is now something of a totally different aspect, where we would sit in darshan and we'd get pushed by the locals forward, and you know, the Swami's coming, all of those type of stuff that happens to you, and you feel uncomfortable coming from a relaxed environment where at bhajans no one pushes you, and you know, and seeing Swami physically go there, you know, now it's time for darshan, now it's time for us to go and stuff. And now coming here, it's brought me to a different understanding, where as soon as you're ready to experience Swami, as soon as you're ready to understand Swami's magnificent force and will, you open yourself up at that time and He will instill His darshan in you. So it could be at the time where it was your favorite bhajan being sung, or it could be at the time where you touched Mahasamadhi. It could be a time like today in the middle of the program where I totally felt connected to Swami during one of the songs. So it's not now waiting for a physical form of Swami to come and grace you, but rather to wait for you to open up yourself to His divine presence. So hearing the news and from what I experience now, there's nothing different. It's just now, as I said before, evolving yourself and understanding that now you have to now evolve, and you have to now be the recipient of love, rather than Swami is now giving you the love. You now need to open yourself up and experience that love from Mahasamadhi.
Wow, amazing. That journey of opening your eyes and seeing Him to closing your eyes and feeling Him.
Yes.
Strongly within.
Absolutely.
And knowing that He is there so much, eager and waiting to just enter into us and enlighten and illumine us within. How has it been for you, Brother Ravi?
For me, it was a bit emotional because I was in India.
You were in India in 2011.
I was in Baroda on an executive leadership program through a French university, E.M. Lyon Business School. Mm-hmm. We were the Indian Railways. But then when Swami was in the hospital, so the message somehow got to Baroda that Prashanti or Parthi is on lockdown, so nobody was allowed in. So I said, Swami, I can't come, you know, to Prashanti. I had to go back home. And then when you get home, then you get the news and you feel emotional because you say, I was right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't come here to join the masses in this prayer for Swami's body. But then it's Swami's body, and I was fortunate that Swami had sent to me at the right time Mr. Mohana Krishnan, who was a professor at Swami's institution here. And they say, like I said to you, when the student is ready, the teacher will always come. And Swami had sent to me all these different teachers to learn. And whilst doing Bhagavad Gita, Mr. Mohana Krishnan will always talk about this aspect about not putting focus on Swami's body, but more on the aspect of the Paramatma. That Swami is all-encompassing and everything exists only because of Swami. So the emotional part was that I was here and I couldn't come. And then the positive part is that at the back of my mind, you know, having gone through training or learning from Mr. Mohana Krishnan, is that, okay, so it's now time to not focus on the body. And so it was a mixed, I think it's called, not emotion, but rather mixed feeling, because everything was, you don't know how to take it, how to receive it. Mm. It's just like a little hole in your heart type of thing, you know. Mm.
On one hand, you were in sorrow. At the same time, God was preparing you for that higher understanding.
Yes, yes.
And I think everyone slowly, eventually has moved. Bhagwan has prepared each one.
Correct.
Through different ways,
yes,
and different means,
yes,
towards that journey,
yes,
of now seeing Him in everything, seeing Him within.
Mm.
And I think perhaps that would be the journey of all the devotees too.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
Who have come for this Parthi pilgrimage. And
yes.
I know the people who have come here are just a very small representative of the huge number of devotees that are there in South Africa, isn't it?
Yes, South Africa is the, I would say, about second largest outside of India. South Africa is about 30,000. Mauritius, I think, would be
30,000 devotees.
Yeah, amazing. I think Mauritius would be slightly more than that. Mauritius is just a 100-kilometer long island, but it's
full of devotees.
Full of devotees, so you know.
Amazing. It's really wonderful. I mean, you have initially I mentioned how India and South Africa are so well connected in terms of these values.
Yes.
And now you have the Sai movement too. It's so vibrant in both these countries. There is so much that is happening so beautifully orchestrated by Swami.
Absolutely. So South Africa is unique in the terms that it has three Sai schools.
Three Sai schools, yeah.
Three Sai schools, yeah. So they have one in Johannesburg, and one in northern Natal, and one in Durban. And these schools are all, it's a fully fledged program. They have students that go into the mainstream of education. So, and it has 119 centers throughout South Africa.
119 centers.
In 14 regions.
Wow.
Yeah, so it is spread out quite well across. Obviously, there'll be those areas where, you know, apartheid was quite rife, so the culture of those areas, you know, would be different. But as time goes on, I think you would find devotees or the spirituality aspect going into those areas. And
wonderful. And I think once you have so many devotees who are on the Sai path, you know, who are so much more into following these values of Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema, Ahimsa, that will only do so much good to the country, apart from doing good to every individual, that will do so much good to the society, so much good to the coming generation, because through the education and human values program and the Balvikas, and of course to the whole country.
Absolutely. And we're getting devotees from other ethnic groups joining. We have Jewish and African and European, and so they're all coming through. I mean, if I could relate an incident at our center, is there was this African gentleman who came and sat at the back of the center. He wanted to observe what was Satya Sai Baba's satsang. And here were all the devotees, some of them eyes closed singing, some of them watching the photograph. And this devotee at the end of the satsang came to us and said, "Sorry, can I ask you one question?" So he says, "Why were you all closing your eyes and looking at the photo when this man from the photo was walking up and down the carpet?"
Oh my gosh.
So it's an African gentleman who is asking us, "But why are you looking there when he's walking on the red carpet?" So we couldn't answer.
Did this happen?
This happened about 6 years ago.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so we couldn't answer him because that's how we were always praying. And yet, yes, somebody that's come out, you know, not part of the organizations, come in and could just freely see the Swami exposed, you know, showed himself to this gentleman.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it only makes you feel that, you know, Swami is working overtime.
Absolutely.
Whatever we may do, you know, it's nothing.
Yes.
You know, the organization is what it is. It's only because he's doing so much all the time.
Yes.
And what we know, what we experience is a microscopic, very little of what he's doing. Perhaps, you know, all these moments also when we feel his presence, I think out of 100 times when he has rescued us, probably one or two times we are actually aware that he has done it.
Yes, absolutely.
There is so much that is happening.
But even in that aspect, Swami has gone into the heart of South Africa, because 99% of the South African devotees are of Indian origin. But right in the heart of apartheid's state, in a town called Kwakwa, is a little African center.
Mm-hmm.
In a village with Mami Lu run there, and they do everything in their language, and they observe Swami's satsang and study circles and everything. So Swami is reaching.
Absolutely.
And is going to reach even deeper and deeper into it. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Amazing. So the organization is what it is because he is doing
absolutely
so much. It's not because we are doing
absolutely
anything.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Whatever we are doing it for our own joy and satisfaction.
Well, Swami says he doesn't need us. My mission goes on with you, without you. So
in spite of us,
we are just instruments.
But I think what you mentioned is so significant because, you know, my mind just went back to that beautiful thought that Bhagwan, of all these countries on this earth, he chose to go to Africa. You know, he chose to go to the African continent. If he ever went outside India, it was only to Africa. And so there is something special about that land. You know, there is something special about those people. And as Bhagwan says, if you need me, you deserve me. You know, where there is a need for love, where there is a need for empathy, where there is a need for this absolute sense of being wanted, you know, there God is always there. And I think you will feel His presence more and more because you need Him. And I think the moment we also engage in that task, you know, we also engage in that work of spreading love, spreading selflessness, of joining the Lord in this holy work of spreading this fragrance of compassion, I think we feel His presence more, you know, even stronger.
Yes.
Yeah, because you are working with the Lord.
Absolutely. And Africa is, if I could say, is one of the pure continents in terms of natural creation.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you don't
find nature. Yes. Even Bhagwan himself, when he went to Africa, he went on a safari and he saw all the zebras and the rhinos and and so on.
And also, you don't have to churn the mandazara with the mandazara. You don't have to churn the ocean to get all the wealth coming out the ground.
Yes.
And the whole world at the moment is courting Africa.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, purely
there are treasures hidden.
Absolutely.
In Africa. Absolutely. And the very fact that the Lord himself set his foot only shows that there is so much that is hidden, and there is so much that is precious, and there is so much that is to learn from that country and that continent. Wonderful. Thank you very much, brothers, for coming to the studios. It's really been a very, very revealing and enlightening session. And I'm really happy that, you know, at least I could speak to just three of you. I know there are so many, more than 150, right?
Yeah.
From South Africa who are here in Prashant and Lim. We don't have the chance to talk to all of them. But at least by Swami's grace, we got this chance to document some little bit of this beautiful love story that is going on between Bhagwan and South Africa. Thank you so much for coming to the studios.
Sairam,
sir. Sairam. So that was the conversation with three devotees from South Africa. And dear listeners, the more you hear these stories, the more you want to continue to hear, isn't it? Because this is the true nectar of our lives. This is the true fragrance of our lives. This is what adds meaning to our lives. This is what will make our life meaningful. But the clock is ticking on and we have to bring down the curtains on Thursday Live. I offer my salutations to Swami for having given us this opportunity of sharing His message and His love. And my thanks to all of you, dear listeners, for being with us, for encouraging us, and for being our inspiration in trying to be of use to the Lord. I am Team Radio Sai Bishu, and as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama entitled All Are One, Be Alike to Everyone. This was presented by devotees from Singapore on 26th May 2013 during Buddha Purnima in Prashantinilayam. So continue to revel in this unity, purity, divinity. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.